Hello everybody, my name is Ken Fallon, and today, 50 years ago, on April the 12th, 1961, Yuri Gagarin flew on the Vostok 1 spaceship in an orbit around the Earth, marking him as the first person to enter space and become the first cosmonaut slash astronaut. Today, in order to capture some of the feeling of that event, I'd like to first of all play for you some of the recordings that I found, which are under copyright of the Soviet Union, so I think we're safe enough to play them. The first recording you're going to hear is the radio communications between Yuri Gagarin and ground control. And then after that, I'll play you an excerpt from the Soviet exhibition in London in 1961. Then I'll continue on with having Danny speak, read out to you, first of all, a breakdown of the flight as it occurred. And then finally, we'll end off the show with the Wikipedia entry read again by the eSpeak text-to-speech engine. I hope you enjoy the show, and I apologize to all the other hosts that I bumped down for this one, but I thought this was too good an opportunity to miss, marking out one of the most important events of our time. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the rest of the show. Sajan, this is NRZB1. Are you hearing me? I'll be transmitting commands to you, over. Attention, 1 minute to launch. Cedar, this is NZB-1, attention, 1 minute to launch, 1 minute to launch. Gagarin, NZB-1, this is Cedar, 1 minute to launch. I was taking the start position, position taken, hence delayed response, over. Ground, ignition key to start position, ignition key to start position, roger confirmed. Broach 1, roger broach 1, expulsion. 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 Roger, expulsion. Key to drainage. Key to drainage. Ignition. This is Sunset 1 ignition. Gagarin. Roger that ignition. Preliminary. Intermediate. Main. Liftoff. Wish you a good flight. This is Sunset 1, we wish you a good flight, everything was going on.
В те исторические минуты, когда космический корабль «Восток» совершал свой полет с первым человеком-космонавтом Юрием Алексеевичем Гагариным над нашей планетой, между Землей и космическим кораблем была установлена двухсторонняя радиосвязь. Товарищ Гагарин сообщал на Землю о том, как он себя чувствует, о том, как проходит полет.
In those historic minutes when the spaceship Vostok was orbiting the Earth with the first astronaut Yuri Gagarin on board, two-way radio contact was maintained between the Earth and the spaceship. Yuri Gagarin reported back to Earth how he was feeling and how the flight was going on. During these brief communications, the Soviet astronaut sent messages. I see the Earth. Visibility good. I hear you perfectly. And sometime later, the flight is continuing well. I see the Earth. Visibility good. One can see everything. Some space is covered by cumulus cloud. And then again, I am continuing with the flight. Everything normal. Everything working perfectly. Pressing on. Sometime later, Yuri Gagarin reported again. Feeling well. I'm in good spirits. I'm continuing with the flight. Everything is going well. The machine is working normally. These laconic messages, full of courage and confidence, which already today belong to history, were recorded on tape. Here is this historic recording. Here is the voice of the world's first astronaut, Yuri Gagarin, from aboard the Soviet spaceship Vostok.
Flight of Vostok 1 from Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia. This is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license. Vostok 1, meaning East 1, or Orient 1, was the first spaceflight in the Vostok program, and the first human spaceflight in history. The Vostok 3KA spacecraft was launched on April 12, 1961. The flight took Yuri Gagarin, a cosmonaut from the Soviet Union, into space. The flight marked the first time that a human entered outer space, as well as the first orbital flight of a manned vehicle. Vostok 1 was launched by the Soviet space program, and was designed by Soviet engineers guided by Sergei Korolev under military supervision of Kerim Kerimov and others. The spaceflight consisted of a single orbit of the Earth. According to official records, the spaceflight took 108 minutes from launch to landing. As planned, Gagarin landed separately from his spacecraft, having ejected with a parachute 7 kilometers, 23,000 ft, above ground. Historian Asif Siddiqui has claimed that Gagarin was in the spacecraft for 108 minutes after launch, and that he didn't touch ground for another 10 minutes. Due to the secrecy surrounding the Soviet space program at the time, many details of the spaceflight only came to light years later, and several details in the original press releases turned out to be false. Background. The world's first artificial satellite, Sputnik 1, had been put into orbit by the Soviets in 1957, and this could be considered the beginning of the space race between the Soviet Union and the United States. Both nations wanted to develop their spaceflight technology quickly, and in particular, both wanted to be the first to carry out a human spaceflight. The Soviet program for doing this was the Vostok program. Prior to a manned spaceflight, the Soviets launched several precursor unmanned missions between May 1960 and March 1961 to test and develop the Vostok rocket and Vostok spacecraft technology. These missions had varied success, but the final two unmanned missions, Korabl Sputnik 4 and Korabl Sputnik 5 were outright successes, opening the door for a manned flight. Crew. 27-year-old Yuri Gagarin was the only crew member of Vostok 1. The Vostok spacecraft were designed to carry a single cosmonaut. The primary and secondary backup cosmonauts for the mission were German Titov and Grigory Nelyubov. The assignments were formally made on April the 8th, 4 days before the mission, but Gagarin had been a favorite among the cosmonaut candidates for at least several months. The final decision of who would fly the mission relied heavily on the opinion of Nikolai Kamenin. In an April the 5th diary entry, Kamenin wrote that he was still undecided between Gagarin and Titov. He wrote, "The only thing that keeps me from picking Titov is the need to have the stronger person for the one-day flight." Kamenin was referring to the second mission, Vostok 2, which would last a full day, compared to the relatively short single-orbit mission of Vostok 1. When Gagarin and Titov were informed of the decision during a meeting on April the 9th, Gagarin was very happy, and Titov was disappointed. On April the 10th, this meeting was reenacted in front of television cameras, so there would be official footage of the event. This included an acceptance speech by Gagarin. As an indication of the level of secrecy involved, one of the other cosmonaut candidates, Alexei Leonov, later recalled that he didn't know who was chosen for the mission until after the spaceflight had begun. Preparations. Unlike later Vostok missions, there were no dedicated tracking ships available to receive signals from the spacecraft. Instead, they relied on the network of ground stations, also called command points, to communicate with the spacecraft. All of these command points were located within the Soviet Union. Because of weight constraints, there was no backup retro rocket engine. The spacecraft carried 10 days of provisions to allow for survival and natural decay of the orbit in the event the retro rockets failed. Automatic control. The entire mission would be controlled by either automatic systems or by ground control. This was because medical staff and spacecraft engineers were unsure how a human might react to weightlessness, and therefore it was decided to lock the pilot's manual controls. In an unusual move, a code to unlock the controls were placed in an onboard envelope, for Gagarin's use in case of emergency. But prior to the flight, Kamenin told Gagarin the code anyway. April 11, 1961. On the morning of April 11, 1961, the Vostok K rocket, together with the attached Vostok 3KA spacecraft, were transported several miles to the launch pad, in a horizontal position. Once they arrived at the launch pad, Sergei Korolev inspected the rocket and spacecraft for problems, and without finding any, the rocket was raised into the upright position. At 10 a.m. Moscow time, Gagarin and Titov were given a final review of the flight plan. They were informed that launch was scheduled to occur at 9:07 a.m. Moscow time. This time was chosen so that when the spacecraft started to fly over Africa, which was when the retro rockets would need to fire for re-entry, the solar illumination would be ideal for the orientation system's sensors. At 6 p.m., once various physiological readings had been taken, the doctors instructed the cosmonauts not to discuss the upcoming missions. That evening, Gagarin and Titov relaxed by listening to music, playing pool, and chatting about their childhoods. At 9:50 p.m., both men were offered sleeping pills to ensure a good night's sleep, but they both declined. Physicians had attached sensors to the cosmonauts to monitor their condition throughout the night, and they believed that both had slept well. Gagarin's biographers Doran and Bizany say that neither Gagarin nor Titov slept that night. Korolev didn't sleep that night due to anxiety caused by the imminent spaceflight. Mission. At 5:30 a.m. Moscow time, on the morning of April the 12th, 1961, both Gagarin and his backup Titov were woken. They were given breakfast, assisted into their spacesuits, and then were transported to the launch pad. Gagarin entered the Vostok 1 spacecraft, and at 7:10 local time, 4:10 UTC, the radio communication system was turned on. Once Gagarin was in the Vostok 1 spacecraft, his picture appeared on television screens in the launch control room from an onboard camera. Launch would not occur for another 2 hours, and during the time Gagarin chatted with the mission's main capcom, as well as chief designer Sergei Korolev, Nikolai Kamenin, and a few others. Following a series of tests and checks, about 40 minutes after Gagarin entered the spacecraft, its hatch was closed. It was soon discovered that the seal was not complete, so technicians spent nearly an hour removing all the screws and sealing the hatch again. During this time, Gagarin requested some music to be played over the radio. Sergei Korolev was very nervous in the lead-up to the launch. He experienced chest pains and took a pill to calm his heart. Gagarin, on the other hand, was described as calm. About half an hour before launch, his pulse was recorded at 64 beats per minute. Launch. 6:07 UTC launch occurs from the Baikonur Cosmodrome Site No.1. Korolev radioed. Preliminary stage. Intermediate. Main. Liftoff. We wish you a good flight. Everything is all right. Gagarin replied. Poikali. Off we go. 6:09 UTC 2 minutes into the flight, and the four strap-on booster sections of the Vostok rocket have used up the last of their propellant. They shut down and drop away from the core vehicle. T plus 119 seconds. 6:10 UTC the payload shroud covering Vostok 1 is released. This uncovers the window at Gagarin's feet with the optical orientation device visor lit. Look, or glance. T plus 156 seconds. 6:12 UTC 5 minutes into the flight, and the Vostok rocket core stage has used up its propellant, shuts down, and falls away from the Vostok spacecraft, and final rocket stage. The final rocket stage ignites to continue the journey to orbit. T plus 300 seconds. 6:13 UTC the rocket is still firing, pushing Vostok 1 toward orbit. Gagarin reports, "Not the flight is continuing well. I can see the Earth. The visibility is good. I almost see everything. There's a certain amount of space under cumulus cloud cover. I continue the flight, everything is good." 6:14 UTC the rocket continues to fire, starting to pass over central Russia now. Gagarin reports, "Everything is working very well. All systems are working. Let's keep going." 6:15 UTC 3 minutes into the burn of the final rocket stage, and Gagarin reports, Zarya 1, I can't hear you very well. I feel fine. I'm in good spirits. I'm continuing the flight. Vostok 1 is moving further downrange from the Baikonur Cosmodrome. He is reporting back to Zarya 1, the Baikonur ground station, and must be starting to move out of radio range of that station. Time in orbit. Ground controllers did not know if a stable orbit had been achieved until 25 minutes after launch. 6:17 UTC, the Vostok rocket final stage shuts down. 10 seconds later, the spacecraft separates, and Vostok 1 reaches orbit. T plus 676 seconds, Gagarin reports. The craft is operating normally. I can see Earth in the viewport of the visor. Everything is proceeding as planned. Vostok 1 passes over Soviet Union and moves on over Siberia. 6:21 UTC, Vostok 1 passes over the Kamchatka Peninsula and out over the North Pacific Ocean. Gagarin radios. The lights are on the descent mode monitor. I'm feeling fine, and I'm in good spirits. Cockpit parameters. Pressure 1. Humidity 65. Temperature 20. Pressure in the compartment 1. First automatic 155. Second automatic 155. Pressure in the retro rocket system 320 atmospheres. 6:25 UTC, as Vostok 1 begins its diagonal crossing of the Pacific Ocean from Kamchatka Peninsula to the southern tip of South America, Gagarin asks, "What can you tell me about the flight? What can you tell me?" He is requesting information about his orbital parameters. The ground station at Khabarovsk reports back, "There are no instructions from number 20. Sergei Korolev, and the flight is proceeding normally." They are telling Gagarin that they don't have his orbital parameters yet, because the spacecraft has been in orbit for only 6 minutes, but the spacecraft systems are performing well. 6:31 UTC, Gagarin transmits to the Khabarovsk ground station. "I feel splendid, very well, very well, very well. Give me some results on the flight." Vostok 1 is nearing the VHF radio horizon for Khabarovsk, and they respond, "Repeat. I can't hear you very well." Gagarin transmits again, "I feel very good. Give me your data on the flight." Vostok 1 passes out of VHF range of the Khabarovsk ground station, and contact is lost. 6:37 UTC, Vostok 1 continues on its journey as the sun sets over the North Pacific. Gagarin crosses into night, northwest of the Hawaiian Islands. Out of VHF range with ground stations, communications must now take place via HF radio. 6:46 UTC, Khabarovsk ground station sends the message, KK, via telegraph, on HF radio to Vostok 1. This message means, "Report the monitoring of commands." They were asking Gagarin to report when the spacecraft automated descent system had received its instructions from the ground control. Gagarin reported back at 6:48 UTC. 6:48 UTC, Vostok 1 crosses the equator at about 170 degrees west, traveling in a southeast direction, and begins crossing the South Pacific. Gagarin transmits over HF radio, "I am transmitting the regular report message. 9 hours 48 minutes, Moscow time. The flight is proceeding successfully. Spusk 1 is operating normally. The mobile index of the descent mode monitor is moving. Pressure in the cockpit is 1. Humidity 65. Temperature 20. Pressure in the compartment 1.2. Manual 150. First automatic 155. Second automatic 155. Retro rocket system tanks 320 atmospheres. I feel fine." 49 UTC Gagarin reports he is on the night side of the Earth. 651 UTC Gagarin reports the sun-seeking attitude control system has been switched on. The sun-seeking attitude control system is used to orient Vostok 1 for retrofire. The automated orientation system consisted of two redundant systems. An automatic/solar orientation system, and a manual/visual orientation system. Either system could operate the two redundant cold nitrogen gas thruster systems, each with 10 kg, 22 lb, of gas. 6:53 UTC The Khabarovsk ground station sends Gagarin the following message via HF radio. By order of number 33, General Nikolai Kamenin, the transmitters have been switched on, and we are transmitting this. The flight is proceeding as planned, and the orbit is as calculated. They tell Gagarin that Vostok 1 is in a stable orbit. He acknowledges the message. 6:57 UTC Vostok 1 is over the South Pacific between New Zealand and Chile when Gagarin sends this message. I'm continuing the flight, and I'm over America. I transmitted the telegraph signal, on. 700 UTC Vostok 1 crosses the Strait of Magellan at the tip of South America. News of the Vostok 1 mission is broadcast on Radio Moscow. 704 UTC Gagarin sends spacecraft status message, similar to the one sent at 648. The message is not received by ground stations. 709 UTC Gagarin sends spacecraft status message. The message is not received by ground stations. 710 UTC passing over the South Atlantic, the sun rises, and Vostok 1 is in daylight again. Vostok 1 is 15 minutes from retrofire. 713 UTC Gagarin sends spacecraft status message, similar to the one sent at 648. Moscow picks up this partial message from Gagarin. I read you well. The flight is going. 718 UTC Gagarin sends spacecraft status message. The message is not received by ground stations. 723 UTC Gagarin sends spacecraft status message. The message is not received by ground stations. The automatic system brought Vostok 1 into alignment for retrofire about 1 hour into the flight. Re-entry and landing. At 725 UTC, the spacecraft's automatic systems brought it into the required attitude, orientation, for the re-entry engine firing, and shortly afterwards, the engine firing occurred, also known as retrofire. This took place over the west coast of Africa, near Angola, about 8,000 kilometers, 5,000 miles, from the desired landing point. The liquid fuel retro rockets fired for about 42 seconds. 10 seconds after retrofire, commands were sent to separate the Vostok service module from the re-entry module, Sharik, but the Vostok equipment module unexpectedly remained attached to the re-entry module by a bundle of wires. At around 735 UTC, the two halves of the spacecraft begin re-entry, and went through strong gyrations as Vostok 1 neared Egypt. At this point the wires broke, the two modules separated, and the descent module settled into the proper re-entry attitude. Gagarin telegraphed, "Everything is okay," despite continuing gyrations. He later reported that he did not want to make noise, as he had correctly reasoned that the gyrations did not endanger the mission, and were apparently caused by the spherical shape of the re-entry module. As Gagarin continued his descent, He experienced about 8G. Gagarin zone report states, over 10G during re-entry, but remained conscious. At 7.55 UTC, when Vostok 1 was still 7 km from the ground, the hatch of the spacecraft was released, and 2 seconds later Gagarin was ejected. At 2.5 km, 8,200 ft, altitude, the main parachute was deployed from the Vostok spacecraft. Two schoolgirls witnessed the Vostok landing, and described the scene. It was a huge ball, about 2 or 3 meters high. It fell, then it bounced, and then it fell again. There was a huge hole, where it hit the first time. Gagarin's parachute opened almost right away, and about 10 minutes later, at 8.05 UTC, Gagarin landed. Both he and the spacecraft landed via parachute 26 kilometers, 16 miles, southwest of Engels, in the Saratov region. A farmer and her daughter observed the strange scene of a figure in a bright orange suit with a large white helmet landing near them by parachute. Gagarin later recalled, "When they saw me in my space suit, and the parachute dragging alongside as I walked, they started to back away in fear. I told them, 'Don't be afraid, I am a Soviet like you, who has descended from space, and I must find a telephone to call Moscow.'" Reactions and legacy. Soviet reaction. The Soviet press later reported that minutes before boarding the spacecraft, Gagarin made a speech. "Dear friends, you who are close to me, and you whom I do not know, fellow Russians, and people of all countries, and all continents. In a few minutes a powerful space vehicle will carry me into the distant realm of space. What can I tell you in these last minutes before the launch? My whole life appears to me as one beautiful moment. All that I previously lived through, and did, was lived through, and done for the sake of this moment." He actually recorded the speech. A stream of banalities prepared by anonymous speechwriters, in Moscow. American reaction. Officially the US congratulated the Soviet Union on its accomplishments. World record. The FAI rules in 1961 required that a pilot must land with the spacecraft to be considered an official spaceflight for the FAI record books. At the time, the Soviet Union insisted that Gagarin had landed with the Vostok. The government forced the cosmonaut to lie in press conferences, and the FAI certified the flight. The Soviet Union admitted in 1971 that Gagarin had ejected and landed separately from the Vostok descent module. When Soviet officials filled out the FAI papers to register the flight of Vostok 1, they stated that the launch site was Baikonur. In reality, the launch site was near Tyuratam, 250 kilometers, 160 miles, to the southwest of Baikonur. They did this to try to keep the location of the space center a secret. In 1995, Russian and Kazakh officials renamed Tyuratam Baikonur. Legacy. The landing site is now a monument park. The central feature in the park is a 25-meter-tall monument that consists of a silver metallic rocket ship rising on a curved metallic column of flame, from a wedge-shaped, white stone base. In front of this is a 3-meter-tall, white stone statue of Yuri Gagarin, with one arm raised in greeting, and the other holding a space helmet. The statue is wearing a space suit. In 2011, documentary filmmaker Christopher Riley partnered with European Space Agency astronaut Paolo Nespoli to film a new view of what Gagarin would have seen on the Earth from his spaceship, By matching video from the International Space Station to the ground path taken by Vostok 1, the resulting film, First Orbit, is being released online to celebrate the 50th anniversary of human spaceflight. End of the Wikipedia article. From First Orbit, a free film to download and share, created to celebrate the first 50 years of human spaceflight. From http://www.firstorbit.org/about-the-film. April 12, 1961. Yuri Gagarin is about to see what no other person has seen in the history of humanity, the Earth from space. In the next 108 minutes, he'll see more than most people do in a lifetime. What sights awaited the first cosmonaut silently gliding over the world below? What was it like to view the oceans and continents sailing by from such a height? In a unique collaboration with the European Space Agency and the Expedition 26/27 crew of the International Space Station, we have created a new film of what Gagarin first witnessed 50 years ago. By matching the orbital path of the space station as closely as possible to that of Gagarin's Vostok 1 spaceship, and filming the same vistas of the Earth through the new giant cupola window, astronaut Paolo Nespoli and documentary filmmaker Christopher Riley have captured a new digital high-definition view of the Earth below, half a century after Gagarin first witnessed it. Weaving these new views together with historic recordings of Gagarin from the time, subtitled in English, and an original score by composer Philip Shepard, we have created a spellbinding film to share with people around the world on this historic anniversary. We have partnered with YouTube to share First Orbit with the world in a special global streaming event on the 12th April. The Yuri's Night Network will also be showing the film at over 120 parties around the world that day. If you would like to watch it at one of these events, then please contact the organizers directly through the Yuri's Night clickable party map. And if there isn't a party near you, then why not make a date with our YouTube channel and organize your own party? You can register the event on the Yuri's Night website by clicking http://mc.yurisnight.net/party/adself.php. And if you are planning a big event, then check out our details of how you can download the film in advance to be part of our global premiere on the 12th April. You can even download a poster from here to print out and advertise your screening. Whatever you do, we'd love to hear how you shared First Orbit, and what you did to remember Yuri, our first spaceman. End of the First Orbit article. Yuri Gagarin from Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia. This is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license. Yuri Alexeyevich Gagarin, born 9th March 1934, died 27th March 1968, was a Soviet pilot and cosmonaut. He was the first human to journey into outer space when his Vostok spacecraft completed an orbit of the Earth on April 12, 1961. Gagarin became an international celebrity and was awarded many medals and honors, including Hero of the Soviet Union. Vostok 1 marked his only spaceflight, but he served as backup to the Soyuz 1 mission, which ended in a fatal crash. Gagarin later became deputy training director of the Cosmonaut Training Center outside Moscow, which was later named after him. Gagarin died when a training jet he was piloting crashed in 1968. Early life. Gagarin was born in the village of Klushino near Zhizhatsk, now in Smolensk Oblast, Russia, on the 9th March 1934. The adjacent town of Gijatsk was renamed Gagarin in 1968 in his honor. His parents, Alexey Ivanovich Gagarin and Anna Timofeyevna Gagarina, worked on a collective farm. While manual laborers are described in official reports as peasants, this may be an oversimplification if applied to his parents. His mother was reportedly a voracious reader, and his father a skilled carpenter. Yuri was the third of four children, and his elder sister helped raise him while his parents worked. Like millions of people in the Soviet Union, the Gagarin family suffered during Nazi occupation in World War II. After a German officer took over their house, the family constructed a small mud hut, where they spent a year and 9 months until the end of the occupation. His two older siblings were deported to Nazi Germany for slave labor in 1943, and did not return until after the war. In 1946, the family moved to Gijatsk. While a youth, Yuri became interested in space and planets, and began to dream about his space tour, which would one day become a reality. After studying for 1 year at a vocational technical school in Umatsi, Gagarin was selected for further training at a technical high school in Saratov. While there, he joined the Aero Club and learned to fly a light aircraft, a hobby that would take up an increasing portion of his time. In 1955, after completing his technical schooling, he entered military flight training at the Orenburg Pilot School. While there he met Valentina Goryasheva, whom he married in 1957, after gaining his pilot's wings in a MiG-15. Post-graduation, he was assigned to Ulusteri Air Base in Murmansk Oblast, close to the Norwegian border, where terrible weather made flying risky. He became a lieutenant in the Soviet Air Force on the 5th November 1957, and on the 6th November 1959 he received the rank of senior lieutenant. Career in the Soviet space program. Selection and training. In 1960, after the search and selection process, Yuri Gagarin was chosen with 19 other pilots for the Soviet space program. Gagarin was further selected for an elite training group known as the Sochi 6, from which the first cosmonauts of the Vostok program would be chosen. Gagarin and other prospective cosmonauts were subjected to experiments designed to test physical and psychological endurance. He also underwent training for the upcoming flight. Out of the 20 selected, the eventual choices for the first launch were Gagarin and German Titov, because of their performance in training, as well as their physical characteristics. Space was at a premium in the small Vostok cockpit, and both men were rather short. Gagarin was 1.57 meters, 5 foot 2 inches, tall, which was an advantage in the small Vostok cockpit. In August 1960, when Gagarin was one of 20 possible candidates, an Air Force doctor evaluated his personality as follows. Modest. Embarrasses when his humor gets a little too racy. High degree of intellectual development evident in Yuri. Quote, fantastic memory. Distinguishes himself from his colleagues by his sharp and far-ranging sense of attention to his surroundings, a well-developed imagination, quick reactions, persevering, prepares himself painstakingly for his activities and training exercises, handles celestial mechanics and mathematical formulae with ease, as well as excels in higher mathematics. Does not feel constrained when he has to defend his point of view, if he considers himself right. Appears that he understands life better than a lot of his friends. Unquote. Soviet Air Force doctor, Gagarin was also a favored candidate by his peers. When the 20 candidates were asked to anonymously vote for which other candidate they would like to see as the first to fly, all but three chose Gagarin. One of these candidates, Yevgeny Khrunov, believed that Gagarin was very focused, and was demanding of himself and others when necessary. Gagarin kept physically fit throughout his life, and was a keen sportsman. Cosmonaut Valery Mykovsky wrote, quote, service in the Air Force made us strong, both physically and morally. All of us cosmonauts took up sports and PT seriously when we served in the Air Force. I know that Yuri Gagarin was fond of ice hockey. He liked to play goalkeeper. I don't think I am wrong when I say that sports became a fixture in the life of the cosmonauts. Unquote. In addition to being a keen ice hockey player, Gagarin was also a basketball fan, and coached the Saratov Industrial Technical School team, as well as being an umpire/referee. Space flight. On 12 April 1961, Gagarin became the first man to travel into space, launching to orbit aboard the Vostok 3 Ka-3, Vostok 1. His call sign was Siberian Pine. In his post-flight report, Gagarin recalled his experience of spaceflight, having been the first human in space. Quote, the feeling of weightlessness was somewhat unfamiliar compared with Earth conditions. Here, you feel as if you were hanging in a horizontal position in straps. You feel as if you are suspended. Unquote. Following the flight, Gagarin told the Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev that during re-entry he had whistled the tune, "The Motherland Hears, the Motherland Knows." The first two lines of the song are, "The Motherland Hears, the Motherland Knows Where Her Son Flies in the Sky." This patriotic song was written by Dmitri Shostakovich in 1951, Opus 86, with words by Yevgeny Dolmatovsky. After the flight, some sources claimed that Gagarin, during his space flight, had made the comment, "I don't see any God up here." However, no such words appear in the verbatim record of Gagarin's conversations with the Earth during the space flight. In a 2006 interview, a close friend of Gagarin, Colonel Valentin Petrov, stated that Gagarin never said such words, and that the phrase originated from Nikita Khrushchev's speech at the plenum of the Central Committee of the CSU, where the anti-religious propaganda was discussed. In a certain context, Khrushchev said, "Gagarin flew into space, but didn't see any God there." Colonel Petrov also said that Gagarin had been baptized into the Orthodox Church as a child. Rise to fame. After the flight, Gagarin became a worldwide celebrity, touring widely abroad. He visited Italy, Germany, Canada, Japan, and Finland to promote the Soviet coup of being the first country to put a human in space. He also visited the United Kingdom 3 months after the Vostok 1 success, during which he visited the cities of London and Manchester, the latter of which has been fondly remembered. Life after Vostok 1. In 1962, he began serving as a deputy to the Supreme Soviet of the Soviet Union. He later returned to Star City, the cosmonaut facility, where he spent 7 years working on designs for a reusable spacecraft. He became Lieutenant Colonel, or Podpolkovnik, of the Soviet Air Force on 12 June 1962. And on 6 November 1963 he received the rank of Colonel, Polkovnik, of the Soviet Air Force. Soviet officials tried to keep him away from any flights, being worried of losing their hero in an accident. Gagarin was backup pilot for Vladimir Komarov in the Soyuz 1 flight. As Komarov's flight ended in a fatal crash, Gagarin was ultimately banned from training for and participating in further space flights. Death. On 27 March 1968, while on a routine training flight from CH Kalovsky Air Base, he and flight instructor Vladimir Soyogin died in a MiG-15 UTI crash near the town of Kerzhach. The bodies of Gagarin and Soyogin were cremated, and the ashes were buried in the walls of the Kremlin on Red Square. Gagarin had become deputy training director of the Star City Cosmonaut Training Base. At the same time, he began to re-qualify as a fighter pilot. Cause of jet crash. The cause of the crash that killed Gagarin is not entirely certain, and has been subject to speculation and conspiracy theories over the ensuing decades. Russian documents declassified in March 2003 showed that the KGB had conducted their own investigation of the accident, in addition to one government and two military investigations. The KGB's report dismissed various conspiracy theories, instead indicating that the actions of airbase personnel contributed to the crash. The report states that an air traffic controller provided Gagarin with outdated weather information, and that by the time of his flight, conditions had deteriorated significantly. Ground crew also left external fuel tanks attached to the aircraft. Gagarin's planned flight activities needed clear weather and no outboard tanks. The investigation concluded that Gagarin's aircraft entered a spin, either due to a bird strike or because of a sudden move to avoid another aircraft. Because of the out-of-date weather report, the crew believed their altitude to be higher than it actually was, and could not properly react to bring the MiG-15 out of its spin. In his 2004 book Two Sides of the Moon, Alexei Leonov recounts that he was flying a helicopter in the same area that day when he heard two loud booms in the distance. Corroborating other theories, his conclusion is that a Sukhoi jet, which he identifies as a Su-15, Flagon, was flying below its minimum allowed altitude, and, without realizing it, because of the terrible weather conditions, he passed within 10 or 20 meters of Yuri and Surigin's plane while breaking the sound barrier. The resulting turbulence would have sent the MiG into an uncontrolled spin. Leonov believes the first boom he heard was that of the jet breaking the sound barrier, and the second was Gagarin's plane crashing. Another theory, advanced by the original crash investigator in 2005, hypothesizes that a cabin air vent was accidentally left open by the crew, or the previous pilot, leading to oxygen deprivation, and leaving the crew incapable of controlling the aircraft. A similar theory, published in Air and Space magazine, is that the crew detected the open vent and followed procedure by executing a rapid dive to a lower altitude. This dive caused them to lose consciousness and crash. On 12 April 2007, the Kremlin vetoed a new investigation into the death of Gagarin. Government officials said that they saw no reason to begin a new investigation. In April 2011, documents from a 1968 commission set up by the Central Committee of the Communist Party to investigate the accident were declassified. Those documents revealed that the commission's original conclusion was that either Gagarin or Soyogin had maneuvered sharply, likely to avoid a weather balloon, leading the jet into a supercritical flight regime, and to its stalling in complex meteorological conditions. The report also suggested the jet may have been maneuvering sharply to avoid entry into the upper limit of the first layer of cloud cover. Legacy and tributes. There were two commemorative coins issued in the Soviet Union to commemorate 20th and 30th anniversaries of his flight. One ruble coin, 1981, copper nickel, and three ruble coin, 1991, silver. In 2001, to commemorate the 40th anniversary of Gagarin's flight, a series of four coins bearing his likeness was issued in Russia. Two ruble coin, copper nickel, three ruble coin, silver, 10 ruble coin, brass copper, nickel, and 100 ruble coin, silver. In 2008, the Continental Hockey League named their championship trophy the Gagarin Cup. In a 2010 Space Foundation survey, Gagarin was ranked as the #6 most popular space hero, tied with Star Trek's fictional captain, James T. Kirk. In January 2011, Armenian airline Armavia named their first Sukhoi Superjet 100 in Gagarin's honor. From 14 July 2010 to 14 July 2011, a copy of the statue of Gagarin from outside his former school in Ubertsy has been installed at the Admiralty Arch end of the Mall in London, opposite the permanent sculpture of James Cook.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.